This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Moms, dads, are you the parent of a student athlete? Do you want to know how to get the most out of youth sports? If so, listen to the Next Pitch podcast to give you the tools to raise an aspiring athlete. It's not simple, but we talk straight and give you the best insight there is when it comes to youth sports. We'll cover everything from nutrition and training to mental toughness and teamwork. It's a podcast you can listen to together with your kids so everyone can benefit. Follow Next Pitch on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Did you speak to him in there? How's he doing? Do you know?
No idea. Didn't talk to me once all day.
Did you try and initiate conversation with Rory at all?
He wouldn't talk to me.
I don't know if you have to if you're the Masters champion. They got beef, and they're not ready to let any of that beef go just yet. It's a Spiegel and Holmes show. We got you until 6 o'clock. There's still some more White Sox stuff that we need to get to before the show is done, but this is a little bit more like bigger picture, higher-minded type stuff that we need to do. But yesterday was amazing for a lot of reasons. Watching it play out, it was beautiful. It was sports at the highest level and the highest emotional range that all of us could vibrate on. So we thought that we would invite our buddy Josh Schrock on. You might remember Josh as someone who covered the Bears for a long time. Well, guess what? Now he covers golf for golf.com, and he joins us on the Circa Sports Illinois hotline. Download the Circa app today. Sir, thank you very much for joining us. It's appreciated.
Hey, it's always a pleasure, guys. How are we doing?
Doing really well. And no one's doing as well as Rory, even though at times it looked like that was getting ready to fall apart. Was there a moment when you thought he wouldn't be able to regain it and get that green jacket?
I thought he lost it and won it about four separate times. I think the opening double bogey, it was honestly, I was like, wow, this is going to fall off the tracks really quickly. The wedge on 13, I think, as everyone will point to, that's a shot that I hit. I've never seen a worse shot in a major championship. I thought that followed with the next bogey where he lost the lead officially. I thought he was done, and to come back and hit that sweeping 7-iron on 15 to 8 feet. I know he missed the eagle putt, but so resilient. And he said it for 10 years now. He just keeps getting back up, and I thought yesterday was such a microcosm of the last 10 years for him, just getting punched over and over again, really making all the mistakes he's made the past 10 years to lose these and coming back and finally getting it done. It was a special day.
You know, a friend of mine made the comp that it was like game 7 of the 2016 World Series. Like, for the Cubs to have to get over their hump, it had to be something ridiculous and back and forth like that. So is this the kind of round of golf we had to watch Rory survive in order for him to cross over?
Yeah, I think this was the only way he was going to exercise whatever demons he had. I don't think it was ever going to be some sort of five-stroke coronation where the last four holes are just people chanting his name and there's no pressure. It had to be this way. It had to be short missed putts with hero shots, with dumped wedges, with incredible escapes. It had to have everything. And I think that now he's going to be freed up to maybe go on a run at these things, because this was, I mean, you could see it yesterday. He talked about his legs were jelly. He couldn't feel his hands. You could tell the nerves. The moment was it was all over him. And for him to be able to miss that putt on 18 and come right back and hit not only a good drive, but then stuff that wedge to 4 feet to give him another short putt to win. I think the 2016 Cubs is an apt comparison. You know, I compared it today in my column to the Red Sox in 2003-04. I remember, you know, Derek Jeter famously told Aaron Boone when they were losing game 7 in 2003 and Pedro was dealing, he said, "Don't worry, the ghost will come out." And the ghost the ghosts always come out for people who are tormented until they don't, and I think this was the way Rory had to do it.
That's a really good one, too, because 04, they come back from down 3-0 for the first time ever. So,
yeah,
it had to be something, Lawrence, ridiculous like that to break through.
Watching the way that this played out with the guys who were there, where there were opportunities for DeChambeau to take hold of this. There was an opportunity for Scheffler to get back into the mix. And it seemed like one by one, every guy was like, well, now I'm going to hit my worst shot of the tournament. That to me was as incredible as watching Rory get off the deck three times in the final round.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the great thing about the Masters is that it seems like no matter how far back some guys are, they're never out of it, right? I mean, you saw Justin Rose make 10 birdies yesterday. I mean, an incredible round of golf. And then you saw guys like Bryson just didn't have it, right? I mean, his irons were poor. I mean, he was hitting balls up until 6 minutes before his tee time, which is very, very unnatural, like clearly searching. You saw all sorts of guys just kind of fall apart. I think Shane Lowry, who started the day six back, shot 81. Just a car crash kind of series of events there, except for Rose, who I think deserves a ton of credit, not only for being a 44-year-old guy who has back issues and who lost the game for a while and could have taken easy money to go to live and chose not to and chose to dig it out, and now he's finished runner-up in the last two majors. I think he deserves a lot of credit, and maybe he'll get his second, but really, really fascinating day at Augusta National just to watch so many big names not be able to capitalize on Rory really trying to give it away countless times.
Josh Schrock covers golf for golf.com, and you might remember him from his Bears days at NBC Sports Chicago.com. You know, the thing about golf, Josh, is like the clutch and choke is just so obvious because the sport is so naked. It's so completely undeniable. And we're watching this here. In football, is there a comp? When do guys choke or clutch in the midst of a football game in your mind? And it's nowhere near as naked, but when do we see it, I suppose? A shanked punt? A missed kick? I mean, those aren't real players, as we know.
Right. Yeah, no, I think that's interesting. The thing about golf that makes it so fascinating is that it is such an isolated, lonely sport. Team sports are so different, and, you know, I mean, there's so much talk about clutch in basketball, clutch in football. What does that actually mean? I think in football, Maybe it's a drop pass or an airmail to an open receiver late in the game, but it's so hard. It's just not the same as an individual sport where all eyes are on you and it's only you. Like, I mean, you can go in a locker room after a big football game where the team loses and there are 10 different players maybe you talk to about something that they could have done differently that flips the game, and you know that's that. And at golf, it's just you, right? It's just you and your thoughts and the course. And that's what makes it such a window into the soul in a way that maybe team sports aren't.
So a guy that you covered since he was drafted got paid.
Yeah. He did.
Kyler Gordon got his money, and now he's the number one AAV slot guy in the league. I'm guessing you're not surprised.
No, not at all. Not at all. I mean, I think for as critical as I was of a lot of the moves Ryan Poles made when I was covering the team, Kyler Gordon was never that. He was the guy who I thought consistently got better. And whenever he was healthy, he has been one of the best slot corners in the league. I mean, the instincts, the ball skills, he's so good blitzing. I thought he got better as a tackler during the first 3 years. Well-deserved payday. And it's funny, you know, for all the kind of misses Ryan Poles has had in certain areas drafting, he has been pretty good at drafting secondary players. And so it's good that Kyler got his money, because that was, that's a franchise building block you get with the first draft pick you ever make. And, it's good for Kyler.
When you watch this offseason that the Bears have had with all these signings, do you think, are these Ryan Poles moves? Or are these Ben Johnson infused moves to your eye?
Yeah, no, it feels Ben Johnson infused to me, just because I find it interesting that the GM, who's an offensive lineman, who is supposed to be an offensive line guru, spent 3 years with Matt Eberflus not really investing a ton into the offensive line, and then Ben Johnson showed up and all of a sudden, oh, hey, you know, Joe Tooney and Drew Dahlman and Jonah Jackson are here. Like, that seems odd to me that a light would just slip that, oh, maybe we should invest into the offensive line. So I love the moves, but they do feel Ben Johnson infused, and I don't think that's a bad thing. I think if you're Ben Johnson, and Lawrence, you and I talked about it before, before he even took the job, right? If you're going to take this job, you're going to want the power. You're going to want to make sure that all the ducks are in a row so that, you know, what might be your only chance to be a head coach, it goes off without a hitch.
Yeah, and that's the way the NFL is supposed to work. The way the NFL is supposed to work, that the head coach is in charge. I'm sorry, Lawrence, he referred to you, so I thought, you know, you guys have a thing. But
you did the thing where you were like, you've got the next question.
I got it.
All of a sudden,
well,
you pointed at me and then started talking.
I know, but then you shook it off. You're like, what are you doing? And like, so I thought you might go back to me. So anyway, Josh, look, have you heard the theory on Ryan Poles, an offensive lineman that I have, which is that he and maybe Ian Cunningham too have previously to this year, because I agree these are Ben Johnson infused, they tried to draft and develop themselves, you know, like not super skilled, badass offensive linemen. But if they had had the coaching and the development that they were going to provide for these guys that they've picked up, then they would have succeeded. That's been my theory on Poles and linemen.
No, that's interesting. I mean, I don't know if that's true, but that's something I could certainly buy. I just always found it interesting that the conversation around Poles and offensive linemen always started with, he was part of the regime that drafted Creed Humphrey. Like, Creed Humphrey was this diamond in the rough. He was an All American, and it was like, well, I don't know if that's really such a badge of honor. But yeah, that's an interesting take on Poles and offensive linemen. I'm happy for Caleb Williams and for Bears fans that he finally decided to invest the money where it needs to go.
What do you think makes sense for them with this year's draft?
Oh man, that's a good. I think you know my stance on Braxton Jones. So if you have a left tackle that you like and you think he's a franchise guy, I would take the left tackle and make Braxton the swing guy, and then you could feel pretty good about the offensive line. I think the Braxton Jones story is really great. He is overperformed where he came from. He's a hard worker, but eventually I think there are just limitations on what you can do, and I think it's time to find a true franchise left tackle if you can at nine. And there should be some options. I don't know how you feel about arm length and Will Campbell. I'm sure you guys have gotten out the ruler and measuring tape enough to figure that out. But I'll defer to you guys on whether or not his arms are long enough, or maybe you go somewhere else.
Well, I have this sneaking suspicion that Poles is going to win at the left tackle spot because he gets one more year of Braxton and his prize, Kieran Amagaji, to try and prove that he's got left tackle down. Yeah. So, yeah.
There you go. Ugh. There you go. Kieran Amagaji. Yeah, hey, I hope it works out. After I left the beat, I watched the experiment unfold, and I'm not sure that's going to work out.
It didn't. It hasn't so far, but maybe it will. He was good, and you see him. He's athletic, and he definitely wants to be good. So I like that part of it.
He's a developmental prospect, which is definitely what you use a third round pick on, I'm told.
That is not how it works.
A texter to the show, Josh, says that choking in football is when it's the last play of the game and you're turned away from the line of scrimmage talking to fans in the stands and you lose on a Hail Mary. That is the definition of choking in football.
I like it. Let's go with it. I'll co-sign that.
All right, that's not bad. So now that Rory's got this thing that he's figured out how to get a Masters, what's now the biggest story in golf going forward?
You mean on course? Because off course, it's, you know, are these guys ever going to come back together? And who knows?
Let's live there for a second. No pun intended. Let's talk about this, because there seems to be some softening from the players, or at least like wanting their respect back when it comes to the majors or big time PGA tournaments. How do you square that circle?
I don't know that you can, honestly. I think from what I've been told, sniffing around on this, the attitudes have kind of changed, and like there are players like Rory who have been like, okay, guys, this is enough. Let's just all get back together. This is dumb. Like, the money's unsustainable. But a lot of guys on the tour are still incredibly upset at the guys who left, and, you know, rightfully or wrongfully so. And they either don't want them back, or They want penalties for them to come back. And then from the tour standpoint, honestly, if you look at the guys on LIV, there's only like four guys, maybe five, that they're even interested in. So at this point, I think they're kind of looking at it like, you know, Bryson's contract is going to be up at the end of this year. Brooks's contract is going to be in the up. Can they pick one off? And then LIV is left with Rahm and one of Brooks and Bryson and Tyrrell Hatton. Like, I think they're just going to try to wait LIV out at this point. And I think eventually, I just don't know how long the stalemate's going to last, because I think the tour has gone from feeling like they need to make a deal to now they are in a position of strength. The ratings are much better. Clearly, LIV is not getting a foothold, right? They were just on Fox on network television last week going up against one of the weakest PGA Tour fields, and they couldn't even draw 500,000 people.
Wow.
So that's where that's at.
Josh, what did you make of Bryson and Rory not speaking at all during the round, but then hugging at the end? I mean, does it feel emblematic of LIV and the tour, or is their relationship more complicated than that?
No, I don't think so. And I think, you know, I know what Bryson said, and I've seen the video. And I think the thing with, I think Bryson is a very finicky communicator. And I think what he was trying to say is not that, one, if Rory was icing him out during the competition, well, of course so. Like, Michael Jordan's like Tiger Woods would do the same thing. They're trying to win. I think what he was mainly saying is, like, I was trying to talk to him after the round to see how he was doing going to the playoff, and he didn't want to talk to me. They're not friendly. I mean, they did the match. They're not buddies. And I think Bryson is such a complicated relationship with guys on the tour, because he wasn't very popular when he was there. Then he left, and he was, you know, the lead plaintiff in the lawsuit against the tour. So you leave, and then you sue the guys. They're probably not going to like you very much. That's just kind of where it's at, right? So I think that's just life. And that's just life with Bryson.
Josh, we appreciate you picking up the phone, man. Continued success. I'm glad that you're getting an opportunity to cover another sport that you absolutely love, and you're doing a great job of it.
Hey, thanks, boys. It's a pleasure. Anytime.
Thanks, Josh. Bryson said he wouldn't talk to me. He didn't say a word to me all day. But then he said, I wanted to cry for him, for Rory. I mean, as a professional, you just know to hit in the middle of the green. I can't believe he went for it or must have just flared it. So it is interesting. I think Bryson was a little grumpy that Rory wouldn't talk to him.
I think Bryson wants back in the worst way.
When he's saying either Bryson or Brooks, I bet Bryson might get back in. That might happen.
I think he wants it. And we'll see how all of this stuff goes. There's a lot of people who have been shooketh by how all of this is played out on both sides of it. And it'll be interesting to see how, if possible, it even reconciles. We need to take a break. When we come back, someone is being a trooper. Someone is playing hurt around the bowls. We'll share who next on The Score.